Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Good day to you all. It's Oliver on the air till 10, and I'm back after 2 weeks away, and we're more than halfway through June now. The world is looking ragged as ever. That's the spirit, says you. How are things with everyone? Dibble a bodder or up to high dough, whatever your situation. Join us on the group chats on the WhatsApp. That's 087 032 32 32 or on the email oliver@rte.ie. Tara Stock, and sure, we'll have a bit of crack today. Now, my thanks to both Dermot Whelan and Shay Byrne for keeping the show lit in the meanwhile. You take 2 weeks out and everything goes a bit madder than it was before. More war. We've got more of that Trump, Elon Musk, celebrity death tussles. That was kind of entertaining though, wasn't it? Mad hurling results as well. Massive monsoon downpours. Although, great forecast for the week ahead. You heard from Brian Jennings there. Many days of sunshine and the temperatures hitting into the 20s into the next weekend as well. So that's all very promising, isn't it? Some deep, meaningful conversation for you as well this morning, because we are meeting an arts legend, Gary Hines, one of the founders and the key driving spirit behind the Druid Theatre Company. They're celebrating 50 years old this year. Druid, as you know, has led the way for Irish theatre for decades and has won international acclaim and a big reputation for presenting new and classic works of theatre. Imagine the fun they had starting that project 1975 with Gary and Mick Lally and Marie Mullen setting out, not knowing where it would take them, how long it maybe would go for. And yeah, Gary herself coming into it. She's one of the world's best theatre directors and a woman calling the shots in a theatre half a century ago. The bishops must have been fainting in the royal boxes, so they must have been. So we're loads to talk about with Gary, the eras of Tom Murphy and Brian Friel, Martin McDonagh, Enda Walsh, Marina Carr, and Druid is still fresh and well at 50, and there's a slew of plays, many of them sold out, to celebrate, but it's all Galway, isn't it? But it's coming to Dublin as well, but it very much epitomises everything great about that Galway art scene. That's Gary Hines coming to chat later. 51551 is the text. Speaking of the West of Ireland, good morning, Mayo. Very upset people, I'd imagine, this morning after crashing out of the championship with the last Donegal kick of the match. Still, it was a nice novelty to see Donegal and playing each other in Roscommon, would you believe? More on that, because Jim McGuinness is very upset. But it's a terrible end to a terrible year for the proudest and probably the most entertaining county in the sport for years upon years, and the least diminished optimism. Well, the Cavan people will be keeping their heads down now this morning, because they had a score difference of minus 29 and Mayo go out with plus 3. So Mayo's gone. Derry's out from that group of death. Clare and the Rossies are also gone. Just 12 counties left in the All-Ireland football series. Six of them are from Ulster. And it took 24 matches to put out just four teams. But it was good crack. And if you really enjoyed the group stages, and some of the matches were amazing, they're gone forever now, because they're just a whole different format next year. I haven't even bothered looking it up. I've heard it's something like the qualifiers before, but it's just, it's impossible. Also, reading around the place this morning, every county left in the hunt for Sam has lost at least one match. So the winners of the All-Ireland this year in the football will not be undefeated. I presume that's going to be the same now in hurling as well, off the top of my head. And the draw has just happened. I'll reiterate it. Brian has said it there, but it's the All-Ireland. They are the preliminary quarterfinals happening next weekend in Croker. Donegal versus the Leinster champions, Louth. Louth will have sighed when they heard that one. Galway, one of the most fancied teams as well. I think Donegal, Galway and Armagh are the most fancied of the teams that could still win it. Down will play Galway. Dublin will play Cork. And Kerry will play Cavan. So the pundits will cry bogey matches from all four of those, because there are clear favourites. But we've been thinking of favourites for a long time. The new rules have kind of changed everything with the massive scores and that 2-point swing that can change everything. So, yeah, Donegal, Louth, the waiting for them in 2 weeks' time. Tyrone, Monaghan, Meath and Armagh. Some surprises along the way, because Meath beat Kerry at the weekend. So there you go, much to look forward to in the Football Championship. We think it was very unfair to bring us here, that's Jim McGuinness, despite breaking the hearts of Mayo with the very, very last kick of the game after the hooter, because the game was still in play, scoring that point and dumping Mayo out, although they had loads of scoring opportunities, which they, as per tradition, sadly missed in the second half when they came alive. He's complaining about being brought to Roscommon because he said it was a 3 hours or something on a bus from the Inishowen Peninsula. It's the equivalent of bringing Mayo to Oma. He said they couldn't get a hotel in the area, so they stayed in Athlone, had to go beyond the venue to come to play in the venue, and they're from Donegal, where is Mayo were very close to it. So he was complaining about it even after it, but that's all done and dusted now, and Mayo left to analyse and wonder what they're going to do next, essentially, is the thing. Something we haven't heard from for at least 30 seconds are those Oasis gigs happening in August. Even Oasis fans must be sick of hearing about this at this stage. But anyway, finally it'll be over soon. Liam Gallagher is hitting back at a council in Scotland. What's happened here? There was basically safety documents which were given to the Scottish Sun yesterday and raised concerns about how these monster gigs, Oasis gigs, were going to clash with the Edinburgh Festival, Fringe Festival, which happens in August. Well, 210,000 people are going to go to the three Oasis gigs in Edinburgh. And a note from the documents, a Freedom of Information request, council officials warning, well, middle-aged men take up more room. So consider this when you're working out the occupancy. And also, we have concern about crowds of Oasis fans on weekends as they're already rowdy and the tone of the band. Concern about the safety of the Fringe and its performers. Are they very weak, the people who go to the Fringe Festival? Many performers are considering not attending on the weekend of the Oasis shows because of the size and tone of the fans. Basically, the Oasis Collectors Group, this is a fans group, says the council are essentially calling Oasis fans drunk, middle-aged and fat. It's a nasty, sneering stereotype, a jaundiced view. And Liam Gallagher has criticised the officials' comments and says to the Edinburgh Council, I've heard what you've said about Oasis fans, and quite frankly, your attitude effing stinks. I'd leave town that day if I was any of you lot. But they're going to go to your shows. Sometimes when he gets angry, he makes no sense. Also, he said, by bringing the tone down even lower than the council, I'd love to see a picture of all the people, of all the people in the Edinburgh Council. I'd say there's some stunning individuals. So yeah, just get the tone down and bring it lower. So that's entertaining people quite a bit. What is this? Should I let my dog or cat sleep on my bed? Erin McCafferty writing in this morning's Irish Independent. Stay well. Should I let me? Okay, animal lovers may not be able to resist letting their furry friends sleep. Do you let your pet sleep next to you? How common is it? Well, according to various studies, 24% of adopted dogs are sharing a bed with their owners 2.5 months after adoption. Nearly half of dog owners in another survey said they allowed their dog to sleep in their bed every now and again. So about half of them let them jump into the bed. The downside is that if you change your mind, you bring the dog into the bed and then you change your mind, it can cause confusion and worry for the animal. They're obviously as meek as the people going to Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And in some cases result in undesirable behaviour as they struggle to understand why they're being rejected. That'll depend on breeds as well. Do cats crave cuddles as much as dogs do? Yes, they do. Cats, like dogs, crave warmth and companionship. There's a feeling among people who don't own cats that they're very self-motivated. It's not true. They are sociable creatures. They don't socialise the same way humans do, and humans view that as a negative, but they love jumping into the bed. Scent is also very important, which is why the pets love getting into the bed, because dogs and cats both seek the smell of their owner and are very comfortable when they're in the bed. But the problem with cats is they're nocturnal creatures. It'll disturb your sleep if you have the cat next to you, because they'll keep waking up and moving and so on. And the obvious health risks are there. Sleeping in close proximity to a cat can trigger allergies from a hygiene perspective. There are lots of fleas. Cats carry fleas. Fleas can't live out their life cycle on us, but it is unhygienic to have cats with fleas in the bed next to you. And roundworm is another issue. This gets worse by the minute. And there are horror stories about the effects, particularly how it affects children from fleas. However, a Trinity College researcher, Dr. Jason Keegan, and he's got a particular interest in this whole area of parasites from cats and dogs. He says the risk of infection from sharing a bed with a pet is low. It's all to do with the lifestyle of the animal. So, for example, if you have a very indoor dog like a Chihuahua, that rarely leaves the house, has all the vaccines, is up to date on the parasite treatments, is groomed all the time, doesn't eat raw food ever, and doesn't interact with much that goes on outside the house, the risk to infection is very low. So keep the outdoor dogs outside is essentially the rule. Who should definitely avoid sleeping next to animals? Pregnant women, due to the serious risk of a parasitic infection. Some common sense there. But once you talk about these things, people get very het up. Very het up if you suggest it's not safe to sleep next to your cat in particular. It depends on the circumstances, basically. Now, while the world has kind of gone particularly bad in America at the moment, just this weekend, you had the protesters, the No King protests, they call themselves, gathering around America to oppose President Trump as he politicizes the military by doing that thing as he did with the huge protests in California, and had a very unusual military parade in Washington. Although reading even the anti-Trump coverage this morning, it wasn't as kind of triumphant as they were expecting. It was much more toned down than what you'd say seeing the Bastille Day celebrations or anything in Russia or North Korea, for instance. But it was unusual nonetheless in Washington. It was also his 79th birthday on Saturday. And then there was the extraordinary outburst of political violence. A Minnesota lawmaker assassinated, and her husband, and an attempted assassination on another one and their partner as well. And the continued war between Israel and Iran, stoking fears of a huge Middle East conflagration. Surely the Democrats are learning from this chaotic weekend and are doing something to endear themselves to the common person. No, they did not. The Clintons and Kamala Harris and company descend on a Hamptons wedding of liberal royalty. It's the wedding of Huma Abedin, longtime aide to Hillary Clinton. Remember that name? It was a household name during that 2016 presidential election campaign. She's got married. She was married to Anthony Weiner. Remember the disgraced New York congressman who resigned in 2011 after a number of sex scandals? And she got away from him, and she's got over him, and is married to a billionaire, Alex Soros, the son of George Soros. He's a great enemy of the Republican right, and he's now the head of this huge liberal philanthropic dynasty, and a rare concentration of wealth and power in the Hamptons. The Democratic establishment descended. It was like a political royal wedding, here it says in the New York Times, bringing the worlds of big money politics and Clinton-era insiders. So they're the married couple. Bill and Hillary Clinton were both there. Kamala Harris, her husband Doug Emhoff, Senator Chuck Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries, Nancy Pelosi. You had celebrities like Nikki Hilton Rothschild and the Vogue editor Anna Wintour. The vocal group Boys to Men, it's very retro, performed at the wedding. And speakers gave toasts, blah, blah, blah. Dishes, yeah, there you go. Truffled pasta, basically. Cold English pea soup, which is very disappointing for a billionaire wedding. And American Wagyu Bavette, there's an oxymoron, with prawns. So there you go. Alex Soros, he's only 39. And she's 49. And he's one of the donor world's most a fascinating kind of characters. He has a doctoral degree in history and has kind of taken over all of the political giving handouts that have been handled for decades by his father, who's now 94 and is stepping back from his big company, the billionaire George Soros. And he's deciding who gets the money. So you imagine they'd all be there rubbing shoulders and being very nice to him and toasting it. And it was a very kind of lots of black SUVs driving in and out of Hamptons while the chaos unfolded around the world, and particularly the fears of that Israel-Iran conflict. There's very important context is the frail leader of Iran. And there's an interesting profile in this morning's Guardian newspaper. It kind of portrays this very weakened dictator. Now, he has intense power over 90 million people in Iran. That's the Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, a ruthless defender of Iran's revolution. He's got few good options left. So he's 86 years of age. He didn't appear in public for 5 years there until October, which was after Israel assassinated the Secretary General of Hezbollah. And he had an uncompromising message when he appeared last October. He said, "Israel won't last long." And obviously there are various messages of how the destruction of Israel is a long-term goal and so on. And this is playing into the hands of Netanyahu and that of air offensive launched on Friday. And it's a big blow to this guy who was basically started his life as the son of a minor cleric of modest means. And he at least pretends to remain in very humble circumstances where he lives on Palestine Street in Tehran. I'm sure he's out of there at the moment as the missiles rain down. But what's fascinating watching The political unrest, unfortunately, people are dying, of course, but the defiance from Iran is quite weak. They're not able to stop the Israeli attacks. Iran's air defences are ineffective, and of course they're firing where they can. Israel has an incredible ability to shoot missiles directed at it out of the skies, and they're just firing everything they can. But the background to this guy is the waves of unrest, which we'd be familiar with over the last couple of years, and the reform efforts. His surge of vicious repression have continued alongside harsh treatment of measures against women, gay people, religious minorities in that country as well. And there are deteriorating economic circumstances, mainly from Western sanctions. Have disillusioned many of his supporters of his regime and broadened the existing unrest. So he's in a bad place at the moment. They're also pointing out here in The Guardian that the biggest mistake he made was investing in the so-called axis of resistance, which was Hamas in Gaza, Hezbollah in Lebanon and the Houthi movement in Yemen, and a motley of various militias in Syria and Iraq. That has all, as you know, gone horribly wrong for him and has collapsed under the weight of Israeli attacks. And the historic alliance with Damascus ended when Bashar al-Assad's regime collapsed 6 months ago. He's now ailing. Speculation over a successor in Iran is rife. A long career is drawing to a close with an old man's greatest challenge yet. The brutal balancing act may soon be over. So it is hard to keep up with everything, basically, isn't it? The dog and cat people, meanwhile, the most important subject in their lives, after all of that. Yes, all my dogs sleep in my bed, always did. My dogs are very clean, says Marion. All of them. Now I want to know how many dogs are sleeping in that bed. Are you in one of those kind of dictatorship giant beds, I imagine? Someone else says, I'm not having this. Dogs are, by and large, loyal companions, whereas cats have staff. An insatiable, independent streak, says John, who I presume is not a cat owner. Maybe you are. Maybe you're speaking from experience. I don't know. We're not going to solve the war between the dogs and the cats. Please, God, they can do better in the human world, for goodness sake. We'll start with this guy. 51551 is the text. Post Malone to start your Monday.